From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
You have made it, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. It is Friday, marking the start of the weekend. I'm sure many of you are at work still. Probably have four more hours on that work shift if you're working that 9 to 5, right? But hey, the weekend is right around the corner. It's Friday, TGIF. You're listening to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We're going to close out your work week with a fantastic show. I'm excited because, again, we've got two guests that will join me on today's show. Of course, one of our guests is Gene Washington. Now, if you are a fan of Michigan State sports, that name should be ringing a bell in your head right now. Gene Washington, famed wide receiver here at Michigan State. He was a three-year starter for Coach Duffy Daugherty from 1964 to 1966. He helped Michigan State to a combined record of 23-6-1. He's a College Football Hall of Famer. Gene will join me live in studio to talk about a pretty cool endeavor, and recount of his playing career and a project that he actually collaborated on with his daughter, Maya, who will also join us on the show. So you do not want to miss that. Of course, we'll talk about the Detroit Tigers, who just had a rout of the Minnesota Twins yesterday. Just a complete blowout. Le'Veon Bell has finally commented on the whole marijuana stint when he was busted, of course, last year. He's finally coming out, and he voiced an opinion on the situation. We'll also reflect on this Reflection Friday, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. A hot show in store for you all, folks, so keep it locked right here. But let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 15th. All right, in an hour-long sit-down with ESPN's Josina Anderson, his first interview since his three-game suspension was handed down last month after being charged with marijuana possession and DUI, former MSU running back, now with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Le'Veon Bell, said on Thursday that he had no problems with the length of his NFL punishment and that he planned on taking whatever other penalties were ultimately handed down to him. He said, quote, "I made a mistake. I'm going to just have to do my time, whatever the final decision may be. Get past it and get ready for next year and continuing to be the great football player I know I can be." Way to just own up to it, Le'Veon. Great stuff there. All right, for the first time since 2006, Michigan State will host the Big Ten Outdoor Track and Field Championships. Of course, the three-day event gets underway today and will run through Sunday at MSU's Ralph Young Track and Field Facility. Today's activities began at noon with the decathlon 100 meters and will conclude around 8:15 p.m. with the men's 10,000 meter. Now, admission charge is $10. And go on out there if you're not doing anything else. All right, folks, it should be a great time out there all weekend. All right, the Detroit Tigers, they topped the Minnesota Twins yesterday. Get this, 13-1. Wow, to take a three-game series, 2-1, winning two games and losing only falling one to Minnesota. Now, the Tigers pounced all over the Twins with 20 hits and four homers, while right-hander Anibal Sanchez turned in a solid performance in a 13-1 win in Thursday afternoon's rubber game at Comerica Park. Now, Miguel Cabrera, he led the way with a pair of two-run blasts and five RBIs. The Tigers now begin a three-game weekend road series against the St. Louis Cardinals starting tonight. All right, Canada Prime Minister Stephen Harper and Governor Rick Snyder met along the Windsor Riverfront on Thursday to announce the name of the planned new crossing as the Gordie Howe International Bridge. Now, the choice in many ways seemed obvious, widely promoted by fans in the vans, although disliked by some for naming the bridge after a sports figure, Mr. Hockey. Of course, he was born in Floral, Saskatchewan, but played for the Detroit Red Wings for the first 25 of his first 26 seasons, 1946 to 1980, in the National Hockey League. That's a pretty cool honor right there. All right, in last night's NBA playoff action, The Cleveland Cavaliers, they advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals due to a 94-73 beatdown on the Chicago Bulls. In the Western Conference, the Houston Rockets, they kept things interesting, mounting an impressive second-half comeback to beat the LA Clippers 119-107 to force a Sunday Game 7. The two greatest words in sports, folks, Game 7. I'm going to be locked and loaded on my TV for that one. All right, former Detroit Piston Josh Smith, he pitched in with 19 points for Houston in the win. All right, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell will hear the appeal of Tom Brady's 4-game suspension. The league confirmed that to NFL media's Albert Breer on Thursday. The NFL Players Association appeal of Brady's suspension was officially filed earlier that day. Now, Goodell's decision to hear the appeal himself is in accordance with the process agreed upon with the NFLPA in the 2011 collective bargaining agreement. Now, Brady's suspension was based upon the findings of the Wells report. The report concluded that, quote, it was more probable than not, end quote, that Brady was at least generally aware of the inappropriate activities regarding the deflation of Patriots game balls used in the AFC Championship game. And get this, folks. In a rebuttal to the Wells report released on Thursday, the Patriots say a text message between equipment workers that used the word deflator referred to an employee's weight loss and not the deflation of footballs. Now, according to the Patriots' annotations, the term deflator, a central aspect of the Wells report's findings, appeared only in one of the text messages, and investigators did not ask equipment staffers John Jastrzemski and Jim McNally about their intent in using the term. Quote, hey, they done so. Had they done so, excuse me, they would have learned from either gentleman one of the ways they use the deflation or deflator term. Mr. Jastrzemski would sometimes work out and bulk up. Are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me. I can't believe I just read that. All right, folks. Well, that wraps up our current sports quickie headliners. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave me a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. Or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, it is time to start the show. Yeah, you guys know who's that voice is, right? That's, of course, legendary blues singer B.B. King. Oh, boy, with some sad news, of course, broke earlier today. Around 10 a.m. That, of course, Riley B. King, the legendary guitarist known as B.B. King, whose velvety voice and economical expressive style brought blues from the margins to the mainstream. He actually died Thursday night. He was 89 years old. His daughter, Patty King, said he died in Las Vegas, where he announced 2 weeks ago that he was in a hospice after suffering from dehydration. So rest in peace to the legendary B.B. King. You know, I never forget growing up in Detroit, and my grandparents used to pick me and my sister up from elementary school. And I tell you what, just about every other day, my grandfather, if my grandmother had gone and picked us up and brought us back, I mean, I remember very vividly coming through that back door and hearing the voice of B.B. King and that guitar stringing throughout my grandparents' basement. Of course, my grandfather was a big blues guy, a big classical jazz guy as well. And, you know, I never forget just walking down the stairs and seeing my grandfather hovering above his old school record player, folks. It was actually an A-track, and it was an A-track and record player, like a dual kind of machine where you could play A-tracks and record players on it. Now, many of you out there listening, many of the students out there listening probably don't even know what an A-track player is. You know what an A-track is, Isaac?
You know, I've heard of it. I can't really picture it in my head.
Really? Well, an A-track player is basically, after records kind of went out of style and they were kind of tinkering around with new ways to play music, A-tracks came out, and they were basically, if I could describe it, as you know, you played Nintendo 64 back in the day, right? Back in the 90s?
I did not.
Get out of here. Man, you're making me feel real old right now, Isaac. Are you kidding me? Well, What's the first system you ever played?
Okay, first system was actually GameCube. I was late on that, though.
Okay.
I grew up without cable and all stuff, so I was one of those kids who actually played outside, you know?
Good. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Well, back in the day, I mean, the Nintendo 64 used to have, like, these little cassettes that you would put in instead of having disc, round disc, or oblong disc like the GameCube. But you would throw it in, you know, into the player, and it would play the game. Well, basically, A-tracks were like a bigger version of that, a much bigger version of that. They were longer, they were wider, and you would put them in, and they had, I think they had like two sides to them, I think. And you could put in one side, and it would play the first half of the album, and then put in the second side, and it would play the second half of the album. But yeah, it was pretty cool stuff, though, man. But my grandfather, he was a very big B.B. King fan, and again, you know, B.B. King passing away. He lived a long and fruitful life. I mean, anytime you get to, you know, 89 or knocking on the door at 90, I mean, hey, that's a very full life. But, you know, he was pretty famous. You know, I can recount many Fresh Prince of Bel-Air shows he was on as well, making guest appearances there. And he was just a musical icon. So I'm pretty sure as the year proceeds, you'll see a lot of B.B. King tributes throughout the year. So rest in peace, B.B. King. Folks, we got a great show in store for you all today, but I do have some sad news. As we were actually playing that B.B. King montage, Isaac, I got a message from Michelle Lawless, who was in charge of the media relations for the great Gene Washington and Maya Washington, who actually are scheduled to be in the area throughout the weekend to promote a really interesting and revealing film concerning the college football realm back in the 1960s, where, of course, racism here in America was affluent, especially more so in the South. And, you know, Duffy Daugherty, I mean, one of the, you know, legendary football coach here at Michigan State University, he was one of the more influential coaches and one of the first coaches, really, in the North to recruit African-American football players from down South. Of course, Gene Washington, he's from Texas, and Gene, along with Clinton Jones, Bubba Smith, I mean, you know, Duffy really set a trend that had a pretty interesting ripple effect. So Gene and his daughter, Maya Washington, have collaborated on a project entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. It's a documentary film recounting the you know, that era in Michigan State football history, you know, the mid to late 60s. Of course, when you know, guys like Gene, Clinton Jones, Bubba Smith, I mean, those players were recruited by Duffy. And it's just such an interesting film. And, you know, I actually talked to Maya last year around January, where, of course, Michigan State went to the Rose Bowl, beat Stanford. I actually, you know, during the final media obligation that the team had, Gene and Clinton Jones were out there, and I got a chance to meet Maya. And I interviewed Gene and Clinton while we were out there, and then Maya after the interview was done, Maya put the bug in my ear that she was working on this project. I think it's been like 3 years in the making. So, but the unfortunate news, to get to the unfortunate news, I just got an email here from Michelle Lawless, who's the media relations personnel for Maya and Gene. She just let me know that, quote, "Al, I have some awful news. They canceled Gene's flight. The other flight he could get on leaves at 1:30, so he will not be able to do the interview today. But we will have Maya on, so we will give Maya a call. She will be on with us at 1:30 to talk about this pretty cool project. Very, very cool project. And I do have one extended headliner for you guys that I found very intriguing, especially myself, me being such a big, 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 I can't say big enough, Michael Jordan fan. I don't know if you saw this, Isaac, but according to a recent national poll conducted by Public Policy Polling, 34% of NBA fans believe that Michael Jordan, who is 52 years old right now, could beat present day LeBron James, who's 30 years old, in his prime, in a game of one-on-one. How about that? Now, the report states exactly, quote, "There's no such division when it comes to who NBA fans think is the best player of all time. 77% pick the great MJ on that question to only 14% who think it's LeBron James. Now, in fact, despite him being 52 years old, 34% of NBA fans think Jordan could beat James one-on-one now, as in the year 2015, to just 54% who think James would win despite being in the prime of his career," end quote. What do you think about that? It's hilarious.
It's hilarious. It's also a little bit worrisome that these people dub themselves NBA fans because, gosh, Jordan barely beat Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in a one-on-one. I don't know if you remember when they played.
Yeah, and he was what? But Mike was still old. I mean, he was still old as far 49. As NBA yeah. years, you know?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, no way. Come on. Oh, this upsets me, and I'm not even a LeBron fanboy, but gosh, that is upsetting.
Well, you know what, Isaac? I am one of those. Put me in the batch of those delusional 34% of NBA fans. Well, I do think that if Michael played LeBron, give me 10 games, 10 one-on-one games up to 10, I think MJ would win one of those, or maybe even two. I think that's how highly NBA fans think of the great MJ. We think of him that, because he was so great back in the day, and it kind of tickles my fancy here that, again, 34% still think that MJ at 52 years old could beat the great LeBron James. Kind of comical, but at the same time, I get the mentality because, you know, we paint Michael Jordan as the greatest, as the GOAT. So I think he would have a chance, though, Isaac. So don't rule him out, all right?
Come on.
I'm telling you, Isaac, he would have a chance. If they played, so you think if LeBron played MJ, 10 one-on-one games, Mike couldn't steal one of those at 52 years old?
I don't think he could.
Man, I wish we could really put this to the test, right? Oh, my goodness. That'll be fun stuff, though. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. All right, let's get to our first order of business here, our first discussion point. Centered upon, former Michigan State running back, great Le'Veon Bell, who has been just tearing it up at the NFL level. Really cool stuff to really see. I find it so amazing, you know, when I see players that I've covered in college and, and we always debate about just how good they would be at the next level. And Le'Veon Bell was one of those players when he was at Michigan State that, of course, we all know that Le'Veon Bell showed a lot of shades of greatness, especially in his final season with this ball club, where it was basically give the ball to Le'Veon Bell. Everyone else, get the heck out of the way. That's basically what the offense was during Le'Veon Bell's senior year here. Now, you know, again, in his first interview, since his 3-game suspension was handed down last month, again, Bell was suspended April 9th for an incident in August of 2014 involving himself and then-teammate LeGarrette Blount, who now, of course, plays for the New England Patriots. Now, as soon as the suspension was announced, sources indicate Bell appealed the decision, and he actually decided to sit down and have an hour-long sit-down with ESPN's Josina Anderson for an upcoming piece in ESPN the magazine. And I really enjoyed, because I actually saw snippets of this piece, and I really enjoyed just how honest and how frontworth Le'Veon Bell was throughout this entire interview. I love this quote. He says, again, this is Le'Veon Bell commenting on the punishment that the NFL handed down concerning that incident back in August of last year where, again, he was caught with marijuana in his vehicle. He says, quote, "I made a mistake. I'm going to just have to do my time, whatever the final decision may be, get past it, and get ready for next season and continuing to be the great football player I know I can be." Now, in February, he was actually sentenced to 15 months probation in a first offenders program. He was required to abstain from drugs and alcohol, complete any recommended treatment, pay a $100 fee and court costs, and complete a safe driving class. I find it very interesting because, again, at the end of the day, when you look at athletes, you have to take into account and always remember, that athletes are just like you and me. They're human beings, folks. You know, we try to put athletes on this pedestal all the time. And I get it because, you know, you see these guys, they're making millions and millions and millions of dollars to play a game where, you know, many of us out there, you know, we have to, you know, put it to the grindstone, go to work a 9-to-5, pay the bills. You know, we're not living this uber lavish lifestyle, and then you have an athlete who can make millions by simply playing a game. And, you know, you would think with that being said and knowing the public realm and public atmosphere that they're in, they would recognize that, hey, I have to conduct myself a certain way. I can't do what I used to do. And I certainly agree with you in that regard as well. But I always keep an account that nobody is perfect, especially when looking at a player like Le'Veon Bell, who throughout his Michigan State football career, Le'Veon Bell was squeaky clean, folks. I can't recall any run-ins with the law or anything off the field that got him in trouble. He was a joy to talk to. He was a joy to interview. He always was Gipper, had a smile on his face, if it wasn't a devastating loss. But, you know, Le'Veon Bell was one of my favorite athletes to cover while here at Michigan State. So when this incident took place, it was certainly surprising that Le'Veon was involved in it. And, you know, I think it's one of those cases just hanging out with the wrong people. Now, LeGarrette Blount, on the other hand, if you look at his track record in the NFL, LeGarrette has had a track record of off-the-field incidences. So it's all about the company you keep, you know? And I think Le'Veon Bell was just, you know, hanging out with the wrong guy at the wrong time, and this definitely served a lesson to him that's, you know, and going more in depth in the interview, I don't think the quote is here listed in this article, but he goes on to say that, yeah, I have to be more aware. I was perfectly fine with the punishment. And he goes on to say, you know, I'm not going to let any woman, any drug, you know, any I'm not going to let alcohol, I'm not going to let anything distract me from my success in the NFL. So I really appreciate it, you know, Le'Veon just coming out and just being honest, taking the shot in the chin and just saying, hey, I'll live to fight another day. I love that. And I think, you know, this is going to be a learning lesson for Le'Veon. And, you know, looking at Le'Veon's career, I mean, even with that being said, I mean, Le'Veon Bell went out and had one of the best years of any running back in the entire NFL last season. He carried the Pittsburgh Steelers in a numerous amount of games last year. I think Le'Veon Bell, and I didn't think Le'Veon was going to be this good at the NFL level, folks. I had no idea that this kid was going to be that good. And it came through hard work and the style of runner that he is. Le'Veon Bell is a guy that can have he's not the fastest guy in the world. You know, in the open field, you know, he'll probably get caught, but at the same time, he is such a power runner, and you are not going to tackle Le'Veon Bell with that first defender, folks. It's going to take two, maybe even three guys to take him down, and that's what makes Le'Veon Bell so enjoyable to watch, and that's what also makes him such a dynamic player in the NFL. Anyway, we all know the shelf life when it comes to, of course, NFL players, Le'Veon being a running back. You know, it's all about if you can be efficient right off the bat because you don't have a lot of years to waste. I think Le'Veon Bell, Isaac, I don't know if you agree with this, but I think he'd be one of the best running backs that Pittsburgh has ever had.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, you know, when you think of Pittsburgh running backs, you think Jerome the Bus Bettis.
Right, exactly.
Then you throw it back a little bit further. But Le'Veon is so versatile. He's such a great blocker, pass catcher, and running back. A pure running back in the sense that he can just find the hole and explode. No, I agree. I think he's got incredible potential. And like you said, it's so refreshing to see this type of openness and candidness from an NFL player. We don't get it too frequently.
Right, and, you know, definitely certain. And you know what? And I'm actually getting a text from a friend of mine, my friend Josh, who's texting me right now listening to the show. And, you know, he wants to weigh in on athletes, I guess, being looked at as role models because, again, you know, we always put athletes on this pedestal. And naturally, because I was the same way. When I was a kid, I mean, and watching certain guys like Allen Iverson and Kobe Bryant, you know, I was a big NBA guy back then. Of course, John Elway, I was a big John Elway guy. I mean, watching those athletes, man, Isaac, I got to be honest with you, man, those guys were my heroes growing up. So, you know, when I remember when Allen Iverson, when AI got in trouble for that domestic dispute with his girlfriend, And when he was all over the news, and the news is bashing him left and right, and I'm sitting there as a kid looking at this like, whoa, okay, this is the guy I look up to. I love him as a player. I love him as an athlete. Then he does something like this. And you know who came in and told me, and it kind of put everything in perspective for me, which is why I look up to him, you know, forever. You know, this is the man who made me into a man, and that being my grandfather. Because even though kids may look at athletes as role models and look at them as their heroes, when these athletes mess up and when they do something that is human, yeah, it could certainly crush your little heart as a kid. And, you know, as an 8-year-old, I'm watching this, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know what I mean? It's riveting. But you know whose responsibility it falls on to put things in perspective for that kid? It's the parents. And that's when my grandfather came in and said, hey, people make mistakes. People aren't perfect. And there's a certain expectation with which you have to have when it comes to athletes and whether we're an artist or anyone on that type of social atmosphere. And he's the guy who really put it in perspective for me. I just think that when kids, you know, when you have your hero do something stupid and you take it to heart, you have to have that individual to come in and put everything in perspective for you. And I just think kids are, a lot of kids grow up in fatherless homes now, especially looking at the African-American community, which I can speak on firsthand. I mean, I see a lot of kids who just don't have that guidance as a young kid. And it's really sad at the end of the day. So you got to put things in perspective. Everyone is human. I think Le'Veon Bell is definitely going to learn from this and become a better individual from it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We've got Kurt from Grand Ledge on line one who wants to chime in on this whole MJ versus LeBron one-on-one debate. How you doing, Kurt?
Not too bad, Al. Now, I just have to say, and I am sure that somewhere along the line in the course of your journalism education at Michigan State that you were probably advised that when you're fan appreciation overrides your objectivity and intellect, you're losing credibility.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. There's no cheering in the press box, Kirk. That's the first lesson they teach us, yeah.
Well, then you have to go back to that lesson and think about the whole LeBron-Michael Jordan thing.
Right. That's a good point, Kirk, because, you know, this is the thing why I love about radio, because radio for me, Kirk, is the only time where I can be kind of a fan. You know what I mean? Whereas if I'm out there reporting, of course, I report everything unbiased on my television show. Any report that I do for WKR.org is unbiased. But in radio, I love it because it's a public atmosphere. I get to express my opinion. And yeah, from time to time, throwing a bit of my own opinion and love and bring out my fandom, if you will. But I definitely agree with you. I mean, and Isaac is on the same page with you, my friend, as well.
I gotta say, you got to be careful how much credibility you're willing to lose for your fan appreciation. You know?
I'm taking the blow. I'm taking the blow today, Kurt. I'll take the blow for MJ.
On a more serious side and then another lighter side after that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm really glad to hear about the thing with Gene Washington and his daughter. I was very glad to hear about the book Ray of Light with Jimmy Ray.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand, while Michigan State has been far from perfect in terms of race relations, it was definitely a pioneering institution in terms of a lot of that stuff, and suffered a lot of growing pains, and still suffers growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
And what people also don't understand is it wasn't that long ago, folks. I mean, it seems like forever ago when we're talking about the 60s, but really and truly, think about it. It's not that long ago, and I'm really glad to see, whether it be this movie with Gene Washington and his daughter or the book Ray of Light or whatever, coming out to make sure that that stays out into the public eye to some way, shape, or form, because it's an important issue.
It is. And I think it's one that a lot of younger Michigan State sports fans really don't know about, you know? And I wasn't really enlightened to it, again, until I was out at the Rose Bowl during coverage of Michigan State's run against Stanford. And again, I just happened to run into Gene, happened to run into Clinton Jones and Maya. And, you know, I just started to, you know, I interviewed Clinton, interviewed Gene, and then Maya came up to me and talked about, you know, the project she was working on. And then that's when I started to engage in dialogue with Gene about those times. And I had no idea up until that point. So I do think it's fantastic that this is getting the publicity that it truly deserves.
Yeah. Now, on a more lighter side.
Yeah.
Okay, you have to be careful when you're talking about technology that is older than you are in terms of trying to explain how it works.
Yeah, you could probably do a better job, Kirk.
What, an 8-track tape did not have two sides to it.
It didn't.
That was a cassette tape.
Oh, okay. Oh, that is the – okay, I'm thinking – you're right. That is a cassette.
Yeah, okay.
You're right.
The 8-track stayed in one position in the tape deck, and it basically had four channels on that piece of tape. So it had recordings on the tape in four different spots, and it would be a constant loop that would go around. The only problem was it actually had pretty good sound. But the big problem with 8-tracks is that in order to get the machine to read the next level down or the next level up, this little metal tab would cross over the recording head and cause it to click down.
Ah.
Now, not all tapes were produced so that they were perfectly balanced in terms of what was on each channel. So there'd be times when you'd be grooving to your song and all of a sudden you'd get this click, click, because the rest of the song was on the next channel.
Right, right.
So,
wow. So in the middle of the song, you would hear that click and mess up your whole groove, mess up your whole part.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, that's not cool. But yeah, you know, and I can visualize, and then thank you for that correction, Kurt, because I can visualize the 8-track tape, you know, because my grandmother actually still has them all piled in her basement to this day. And those things were pretty big, too, am I right?
Yeah, they were bigger than the standard cassette. They were about as wide as a cassette.
Right.
And it was thicker and fatter because the tape, of course, having four channels, needed to have a wider tape on it. And then it was longer to go into the deck. And when I was in college, you know, which was a long time ago, I had a piece of technology that was kind of hot at the time, and that was I had an 8-track deck that also recorded off your record player.
Oh, wow. Look at you, Kirk. You were the man. You were the man back in the day. Wow.
Yeah, that lasted about, you know, 45 minutes.
Right. Well, I tell you what, Kirk, I appreciate that. I stand corrected. And I got to ask, before we let you go, Kirk, do you still own an 8-track?
I own an antique travel trailer, an Airstream travel trailer that has an 8-track player in it, but I do not have any tapes.
Gotcha. Interesting stuff, my man. Kirk, thanks a lot for the call, as always. Fantastic.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's hit our first break, ladies and gents. When we come back, we will be chatting with Maya Washington, who is the daughter of the great Gene Washington. They have a pretty cool film coming out, as you just heard, again, entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. Again, the film is not just a football film, but a story about the history and changing face of college football. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Yes, rest in peace to the great B.B. King. Boy, oh boy, shocking news there. All right, folks. Well, again, our phone lines are open. They will stay open all the way up until 2 o'clock. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Now, again, folks, we just got word that he will not be able to join us. They actually canceled his flight. Come on, Delta Airlines. What's going on? So his flight, I believe, is actually, I believe they're boarding right now. I'm looking here at my email at 1:30. I don't know if that's right, but we do have his daughter on the line with us. Now, of course, he was a 3-year starter for Michigan State back in 1964 to 1966, helped Michigan State to a combined record of 23-6-1 during his career. including back-to-back Big Ten and national titles in 1965 and 66. Now, during that three-year span, the Spartans posted a 17-3 record in Big Ten games. He was a two-time first-team All-American, two-time first-team All-Big Ten selection, and led the team in receptions for three straight years. He even ran track here at Michigan State. And right now on the phone, we have his daughter. Now, she is a filmmaker, writer, actor, educator. She does it all. She's put together a remarkable piece of work entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. Now, the film is not just a football film, but a story about the history and changing face of college football. It's the story of young black athletes recruited from the South at the peak of segregation to play for Michigan State. It's my pleasure to welcome the daughter of the great Gene Washington, Maya Washington. How you doing, Maya?
I'm good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks a lot for joining me. I'm a little salty that your dad couldn't join us as well. Is he on board right now? Is he flying right now?
Exactly. He is up in the air, flying all the way to East Lansing. My flight is a little bit later. And so our plan was for him to be with you
right
in the studio and for me to join by phone. But at the last minute, you know, it happened. I think the funny thing about the Twin Cities is I think there's only about maybe four flights to Lansing a day.
Right, exactly.
And there's only a few airlines that actually get us there. But I'm excited, and hopefully we'll definitely get to see you in person this weekend.
Without a doubt. I'm sure I will definitely see you guys this weekend. Now, Maya, I want to start off by talking about, of course, being the daughter of Gene Washington. Now, of course, Gene was drafted in the 1967 NFL draft to the Minnesota Vikings and also played for the Denver Broncos. I just recounted his historical career here as a Spartan, playing wide receiver and also in the world of track and field. I mean, I got to ask, what was it like being the child of really football royalty?
Well, I think the crazy thing is I was born after all of this happened.
Exactly.
So my sincere interest in his career really emerged after Bubba Smith passed away in 2011. The night before the memorial service, my dad and his teammates from the 60s were gathered at Bubba's home, and it was the first time I really saw my dad as someone who might have been a teenager at one point, or someone I could kind of like see as someone other than my dad, and it just got me thinking, and I was so touched by how kind and warm everyone was, and really moved to hear some of the stories about how my dad got to Michigan State. So growing up, I really just knew my dad as dad. He had a business career and did a lot in the Twin Cities and across the nation in terms of recruiting young women and minorities to various corporations that he worked for, primarily in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew of him as someone really dedicated to diversity and creating opportunities in the educational space as well as in the private sector. But the extent to like how amazing he was as a football player was unfortunately lost on me, I think. people, you know, my whole life, oh, your dad played for the Vikings. Wow, does he still go to the games? Was the general kind of response around our community. But, you know, we're talking about almost 50 years ago. It just wasn't part of my day-to-day life outside of various Vikings events here and there, but I'm so grateful now to better understand and be immersed in his amazing legacy and the legacy of George Webster and Bubba Smith and Clinton Jones and others on that 65-66 team who just really changed the face of college football.
Yeah, so Maya, how old were you when it really hit you? When it comes to the impact of what Gene Washington meant to the game of football,
I really feel like it's still landing on me. Like,
right?
I did not know he was a first round draft pick. I mean, it's embarrassing to admit that, you know, because he just was humble and my parents just kind of switched gears and had whole other lives after football. So really, it was the past 3-4 years that I've been on this journey that I've even begun to appreciate his remarkable career, and even look at this old footage and watch him on the field. It's it's really amazing to try to connect my brain and wrap my head around all of this.
Now, Maya, I want to talk about, of course, this remarkable project that you guys have put together through the banks of the Red Cedar. Can you give us a brief summary of what it is about and what made you want to pursue this alongside your dad?
Well, it basically follows my dad and the three others who were first-round draft picks in 1967. Three out of the four were all from the segregated South. Bubba Smith is who recommended my dad to Michigan State. So the coaches at Michigan State probably wouldn't even have known Gene Washington existed if it weren't for Bubba Smith and his father. And so I was really motivated by that connection to Bubba Smith, how kind that was. I mean, imagine limited transportation, segregation, two black parts of town, 100 miles apart. Bubba's from Beaumont, Texas. My dad was from LaPorte. Mm-hmm. And for a gentleman 100 miles away to tell Michigan State, hey, you need to check out this other kid who plays against Bubba, way across town, you need to check him out. And on that recommendation, Michigan State coaches started talking to him, and he was recruited on a track scholarship, actually, and not a football scholarship. Michigan State wasn't even aware of how talented I think he was as a track athlete, and this weekend we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of his 1965 high hurdles title, as well as his relay title, and there were a few other football team members who were on that team as well. So for me, it's trying to connect the dots for our generation to say, you know, this, yes, was 50 years ago, but that wasn't that long ago. And I'm so touched at how the contributions my father and his teammates made, and specifically that Michigan State made to college football and eventually pro football just by those early opportunities. And it was the first time we were seeing black starters in college football in the masses that we were seeing. So I'm just really touched. I'm overwhelmed. And this is just my love letter to MSU, to Lansing, to my dad and his teammates in gratitude for the ways that they have really been pioneers.
That is fantastic stuff. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are talking with filmmaker, writer, actor, and educator who has put together a remarkable piece of work entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, Maya Washington. Now, Maya, you know, when putting this whole project together, you know, in organizing how the story, you know, was told throughout this piece, and I'm looking forward to checking it out. What was the most difficult part for you? And going back and talking to your dad and Clinton Jones and so on and so forth, and other athletes of that team, there was a lot of racism going through that time as well back in the 60s, right?
Yes, quite a bit. And the thing that was so profound, and I think if you look at where we're at, and clearly race in America is still a conversation that we continue to have. But for me growing up, I could probably recount every slur I've been called, every person who looked at me funny, every, you know, difficult thing that's happened to me as a woman of color. Mm-hmm. Whereas my father's generation, because it was legal, you know, the difference for us now is we have the right to say, hey, I don't deserve to be treated that way, or this isn't right. You know, regardless of what your race or background is, we have the right to stand up and say, this isn't okay. Whereas in my dad's day, they didn't even have that voice. They didn't have the opportunity in the way that we do, to be able to speak out against oppression and discrimination and Jim Crow. So those were really challenging times. There was whites only and colored drinking fountains, public spaces and places. My dad, the first time he'd been on an airplane, first time he'd gone to a hotel, first time he'd been waited on in a restaurant by a white waitress, was all of this was brand new for him. And so the reality for the men in the South was so bad that when they got to Michigan State, it was, you know, this is it. I mean, they were so committed to being student athletes, to achieving on the field, on the track, in their classes, because they saw this as an incredible opportunity. And it is a huge miracle and blessing that the East Lansing community was as supportive of these players as they were, and that Duffy Doherty was consciously kind of using this opportunity to not only just better the football program, but to support President Hanna's ideals of equality that he was basically exhibiting at Michigan State at the time as a member of the Civil Rights Commission. So there's so much that Michigan State did to kind of help make that transition for them, but it wasn't easy. And the thing that amazes me is, unlike my generation, the way they reminisce and talk about those things, it's just a very different packaging and approach than it is for us, because we just can't wrap our heads around not having the right to stand up and speak up when we see things that just aren't right.
Now, when you talk to, of course, your father and Clinton and so on and so forth, when they talked about, you know, coming from the South to Michigan State University, a primarily white institution, did they go through any incidents of racism here at Michigan State on campus?
Well, as they tell it, it's kind of like a two-sided feeling for us. I mean, we can say, well, certainly they did. There were people in East Lansing who were not ready for African-American young men to be in their community, to be potentially in a position to date their daughters. And so there were instances, not necessarily spoken rules or, you know, kind of mandated discrimination, but there was kind of an unspoken rule that players shouldn't date outside of their race. There was some pressure that Dan Doherty, Duffy Doherty's son, shared some great stories from boosters and others in the community who felt like, wait, where is this going, Duffy? You know, this team is getting a little too black, you know. Mm-hmm. And he had to deal with comments and just prejudice and issues and things that would come up in polite and not so polite conversation. But overwhelmingly, because of John Hanna, in terms of by the time my dad got there, the policies were to be an inclusive space. My dad had a white roommate. The dorms were desegregated by then. So for the most part, compared to where they came from, it was much better. But of course, things were far from perfect. I did interview one of his classmates, Sherry Payne, who was at Michigan State a year or so before my dad. And so her experience was that the dorms, from her perspective, were still segregated, if you can believe that, around, you know, 63, 62. And so her experience was very different as an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends on who you talk to. So it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But in talking to them, it was so much better that they were able to still thrive and be successful despite, you know, obvious race issues that may or may not have come up.
For you, Maya, what do you think is the most revealing and riveting part of this piece of work?
Well, I think, you know, for me, what's been the most special for me has been to reconnect with kind of where I came from, and that being a major theme throughout the film, that whether your dad is a plumber, whether he's the president of America, or he's, you know, working at your local school or whatever it is, that what your parents do to provide for your family really does shape your life, and their life is connected to any number of hundreds of lives by way of what they did. So if they're makers, fixers, the cars they built, the homes they helped build or produce or sell, you know, this idea that the American dream, for the most part, is real, but this idea that we're all connected, the fabric of our collective consciousness and experience is connected. And so it's given me a real opportunity to find myself through finding my dad, find my history, and find the ways that Michigan State, and again, the title is Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, but how through Michigan State's legacy, not just my life has been changed, but so many lives have been touched by the university.
That is fantastic stuff, Maya. But Maya, before we get you out of here, I want to ask, when putting together Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, Did the process bring you even closer to your dad? And what's something that you learned about him? Now, you've touched on a few here, but, you know, something different that you learned about him that you previously didn't know.
That's a good question. I think we both learned a lot about each other because I was an artist. I'm an arts person. He's a sports person. So I took ballet. I didn't want coaching from him. You know, like I didn't want him to be able to have a say because he was such an elite athlete. I just didn't want him kind of in my business in that way. But
right.
Now I completely, you know, regret that. And I'm so grateful that through this film project, our two lives have been able to meet in the middle, you know.
Right.
I think I just have a genuine appreciation for him. I think, of course, all the sports accolades were all brand new information, you know, things I completely learned about him. But I think the crazy thing that happened in our experience following the 2013-2014 season and my getting to know the players who are playing at Michigan State today and seeing what their lives are like and their schedules, it's the first time I've been able to really appreciate how hard my dad worked. You know, prior to this experience, because I was so removed and I was an artist, like whatever, you know, athletes, college athletes, you know,
yeah.
In the 2000s and the 90s, what we hear about athletes, unfortunately, isn't always the best thing. So I had this false belief that, well, my dad's generation, they were the last of the good ones. And so I'm so in awe of how hard these guys are working, especially the ones who just entered the draft and are getting started on new teams. Trey is in Minnesota. He's
right.
With the Vikings. He's wearing Clinton Jones's number.
Wow. Wow. I didn't realize that. Man.
Yeah, the same number almost 50 years later. And so my dad and I got to go to minicamp and have lunch with Trey and I'm just in awe of how hard they work, you know, and the little bit of time that we got to catch up,
yeah.
You know, he's off to meetings, he's off to workouts, his training schedule is amazing. So seeing it through our generation and seeing these guys take on such an amazing feat at 19, 20, 21 years old, it's just given me an appreciation to really consider, wow, Dad, I cannot believe you accomplished all of that. You know, when
right.
you were 22 or 23 years old, and then you still, you know, went on and did amazing things after football. So I think that's the thing that's most touching, the way that my perceptions have been changed and the level of complete respect I have for college athletes, and especially because I've gotten to get closer to football players, completely really expanded my horizons, and I'm just so impressed.
That is fantastic stuff, Maya. So when you sat down and had lunch with Trey Waynes, I mean, is he a bit nervous at all with everything that's taken place in the past few months concerning his NFL career?
Well, you know, he's kind of a reserved, laid back personality anyway.
Right, he is.
So if he's nervous, he sure is handling it well. I mean, he fits in great in Minnesota in terms of kind of how he's doing on the team and early comments from the coaching staff and our local media here in the Twin Cities is like he's rocking it and doing a great job. And so he has a great family and great support, and he's just a great guy. So I expect him to do very well and to be successful. And he has us. He has the Washingtons in Minnesota if he needs us. So, you know.
Yeah.
Anything he needs, we'll have his back. But it's just really awesome to see these great things happening for great people.
That is great stuff. All right, Maya. Well, for anyone out there listening and want to get more information about this incredible project, here's your time. How can they, you know, what's expected? How can they, you know, learn more about what you're doing with Through the Banks of the Red Cedar?
Well, they can go to our website. It's throughthebanksoftheredcedar.com. We're in the midst of a finishing funds campaign. Our goal is to finish the film by early 2016. So we have some fundraising to do to pay for licensing footage and finishing our edit and color correction and some of those costs that come up as far as finishing the film. And so I'm excited this weekend to announce that for any donations over $50, we're celebrating how far college football has come in 50 years for 50 for 50. You will receive an autographed photo of my dad.
Wow. There you go.
And we will get that to you in gratitude for your donation. And there's a link to donate on our website.
And we will be sure to put that on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And I'll also tweet it out later on today. Maya, I'm excited that you're in town. We got to link up, all right?
For sure, for sure.
Definitely. Again, the one, the only, Maya Washington. Again, folks, just simply go to throughthebanksoftheredcedar.com for more information on this fantastic film. Thanks a lot, Maya.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Isaac, we got 5 minutes left in the show, my man. I say we jump straight to Reflection Friday. Here we go. All right, folks. Yes, TGIF. It is Friday, May 15th. You've made it. The weekend is here. And we are closing out shop here at WKRS Current Sports. And each and every Friday, we love to look at the week that was here on WKRS Current Sports and bring you our favorite moments, our favorite stories, and even bring up some stories that we may not have gotten to throughout the week. So, Isaac, I'll start off. First off, I want to give a special shout-out and big thanks to Maya Washington and, of course, Gene Washington, who unfortunately couldn't be with us on the show today. But I think this is a fantastic project. I really can't wait to see. Again, it should be released, as you just heard from Maya, next year. But just a really cool moment in Michigan State sports history that, frankly, a lot of people don't know about. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. So shout out to Maya. I thought that was a great interview. Also, I don't know if you saw this story, Isaac, but Jim Harbaugh, head football coach of the University of Michigan, is in Peru. How about that? He's on his annual missionary pilgrimage to help the Santissimo Sacramento Catholic Parish in the village of Piura, which is a poverty-stricken town 600 miles north of Lima. Now, it's something Harbaugh has done since 2009. Last year's 8-day trip was documented by Comcast Sports Network Bay Area for an hour-long special entitled Peru Ball, Jim Harbaugh in South America. How about that, man? Jim Harbaugh, it's kind of hard not to like this guy, huh?
Yeah, you know, he's got the kind of exterior.
Yeah, when he's in game mode, he's like, gosh, you know, oh my goodness, he's like, dude, get away from me, man. But he's a great guy, though.
He is, yeah. He becomes, like you said, in games, he's a total villain. He's right. Angry. He's red as the color of the 49ers. But, man, once it comes to off the field, he is a good guy. And you look back on him showing the American Sniper film a couple of weeks ago at U of M, he's a guy that stands up for what he believes in.
Yeah, that is certainly true. Isaac, you got a favorite moment, favorite story or anything throughout the week here on the show?
Well, I'll just go back to the ridiculousness of Deflategate. The deflator. The deflator.
Yes.
I mean, yes, and I don't know if you heard the medium through which they were sending the messages, but it's AIM. AIM.
Really? They were using AIM? All those messages were through AIM? Wow. That's interesting stuff, man. But yeah, but I couldn't believe what I read in the headliners. The deflator, I hadn't been doing anything deflating balls. The guy is acknowledging himself as the deflator, referring to an employee's weight loss. Are you kidding me? Come on, man. Do they really think we're that stupid?
No, I know. I might go to the gym after this and just deflate a little bit.
Yeah, who says that? Like, I'm going to the gym and I'm going to deflate some of this weight. No one says that. Like, come on, dude. All right. Well, folks, we are out of time. I want to give a special thanks again to Maya Washington for joining me on today's Current Sports. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic weekend. And as always, hey, be easy, people.